Welcome back to the Free Kit Martin podcast. We are so happy to be here with you again. Stacey and I have had some scheduling problems over the past couple of weeks. We like to drop these every weekend. And so we just, we couldn't wait to get together and talk some Kit Martin again. How are you, my dear girl?
Hey, I'm good. I'm so glad to be back on the podcast and be sharing some of the information with our listeners. And so glad to be with you, Crystal.
I'm Crystal McKenzie. I have been a longtime radio personality, lifelong, as a matter of fact. Stacey Stone is the ex-wife, you know, of Kit Martin, the good ex-wife, the one and only, as he says. And his sister recently wrote the most beautiful excerpt on Facebook. We have shared that over to our Facebook page, the Free Kit Martin Podcast Facebook page. We invite you to get on over there and take a look at it. But we would like to start the show today with reading Tori's letter to the world about her brother. Would you mind doing that for us, Stacey?
I'll be glad to. I think it was very heartfelt, and I think it's really been one of the only times the immediate family has actually spoken, and I think it's taken them a long time to resolve that we're going to have to get this information out to the public, because I think not everything is known, and we are here to make the public aware. So I'll go ahead and start with it, Crystal,
if
that's
okay. Let's listen.
Okay, and this is the title, and I will try my best to get through this because I know it was so heartfelt. Who could have predicted a decorated combat veteran's biggest fight would be for his freedom at home? This is the story of a dedicated war veteran, a cheating wife convicted of bigamy, a small Kentucky town too scared to talk, a corrupt judge and police department with a proven track record of deceit, planted evidence, unidentified DNA, and a Kentucky attorney general that rode the case to the state governorship. Christian Kit Martin sits in a Kentucky state correctional center convicted of a triple murder that he didn't commit. The case was followed closely by Court TV and documented on the hit series Dateline, amongst many other news outlets. Kit was his call sign from the days as a military helicopter pilot. It's now a name he is referred to by the many supporters around the globe that continue to follow and advocate for his innocence. It's a complicated story, which at times seems too unreal to actually believe. Kit met Joan Harmon online after divorcing his first wife of 12 years. She told him that she was the victim of domestic violence and was escaping an abusive relationship with her three children. Kit, always the rescuer, fell quickly for her while allowing her and her children to move into a rental home that he owned. Married 6 months later, they were sent overseas to Germany for several years, which only helped to further isolate Kit from family and friends that had clearly begun to see that something wasn't right about Joan Harmon. Many years later, they returned to the United States, where he was assigned to Fort Campbell, Kentucky. They purchased an old farmhouse in Pembroke, Kentucky, and began fixing it up. Over time, the relationship began to sour, and Kit began to realize there were secrets and an affair. He asked her to begin counseling and eventually for a divorce. The tide turns quickly, and Joan threatens to ruin his life and tells him she knows just how to do it. She then wages a war in a civilian court, accusing him of child abuse. The case is quickly thrown out when she's caught coaching her son outside the courtroom by a lawyer who is awaiting another case. Her next attempt is to use his military status against him, and she takes her complaints to the Army. He's quickly dismissed of regular duty and placed in career purgatory as the Army begins to investigate her allegations as part of their hardline stance on domestic violence. Joe knows that if found guilty, he will not only be dishonorably discharged, but she will also be awarded hundreds of thousands of dollars from the government. During this time, Joan is living in another part of town and has continued an affair with the neighbor across the street, Calvin Phillips. buckle up. This is where the story escalates and results in the triple murders of Calvin Phillips, his wife Pam, and their next door neighbor, Ed Danzerow. The military case is complex, and despite her best efforts, he is acquitted of the most serious charges, but he is found guilty of two misdemeanor charges, dishonorably discharged and sent to Leavenworth Prison for a short period of time. His distinguished career and retirement are gone. Once out, he begins to rebuild his life. He applies to a flight program that converts helicopter pilots into fixed-wing pilots. He spends several years in flight school and becomes one of the elite few that complete the program. He begins flying for American Airlines and settles in North Carolina. In 2019, after 4 years as a cold case, the Phillips family meets with then Attorney General Beshear and the process to launch an indictment against Christian Kit Martin begins. The following resources outline the indictment process, the court case that follows, and the aftermath of injustice, which, Crystal, they can go to the Free Kit Martin podcast on our Facebook and on social media where this letter is posted, and they can click those links for the sources that she cites.
My goodness, she is citing a lot of sources here, too. It's really something.
Chris Martin's family is working tirelessly with a team of dedicated and passionate attorneys and supporters to free him. We urge you to assist us by exploring this case and the details that led to the miscarriage of justice. We welcome your questions and pray that you will find this story equally shocking and compelling. We hope that your talents will further assist us as we work to free Kit and prosecute those truly responsible. Thank you for your time. The Martin family. Tori.
My goodness, man. Isn't that something?
So, what an amazing letter that, while so much has happened throughout a period of years, she sums it up basically into a page and a half. And it's an amazing letter.
It really is. Thank you, Tori. Man, we appreciate that. I mean, everyone, the world appreciates that. The family, of course, just visited Kit, and that was pretty special. I can't even imagine, you know, how good it felt for his mom to actually be able to hug him. You are able to hug him when you go visit, right, Stacey?
Yes, you can hug him when you first get there after he comes into the room, and you can hug him when you're leaving. So his mother and his sister told me that it was just an amazing visit. And it was funny because I guess he's funny, weird, I guess, because he's talked about, you know, it's been so long since he's seen his family that he tried to imagine their faces. And he said, wow, they look so much younger than I thought they would. And he said it must be from taking good care of themselves and eating right. So that was his analogy, yeah.
Oh, they are such special people. They really are. And I'm so happy that they all got to see each other. That really warms my heart. I know it's a lot for them. They're in their 80s, and I can't even imagine making that trip like it was for Mrs. Martin. But I'm so glad she got to do it, and I know she's planning on doing it again very soon. So that's just remarkable. Hey, I would love, now that I've read Tori's letter, and thank you for reading that, Stacey. It was very special. Tori is one of the twins, by the way. You know, he has twin sisters. Kit has twin sisters. And yes. It's very, very cool to hear from one of them. And we appreciate it, like I said. But what it just left me with more questions. And again, I'm constantly asking questions about this. So, you want to go through some of the questions that I've just been writing down lately, sweetheart?
Sure. And Crystal, I think there's many, many questions that we have. And I think, you know, his hopefully new attorneys will be addressing many of those. And I think we'll get more answers that we haven't had to this point.
Oh, that is exciting. It really is. Oh, and the other thing that's really exciting, and towards the end of this particular episode, we'll get to the Emilio Corsetti, I Will Ruin You book. By the way, that is coming out on It's sneaking up on us already, but the 26th of March, that's a go. Every book is released on a Tuesday. Don't know if you realize, but Tuesday is, you know, book release day. And so Tuesday here in just a couple of weeks on the 26th, we will have a brand new book about this case. And I've always said from the very beginning, since the first time I met Emilio, because he's a former pilot and he wrote this book according to the evidence that was presented in that trial. And he has come to the conclusion that he cannot find anything that incriminates Christian Kit Martin. A spoiler alert, but that's what you're going to learn out of the book, right?
Yes. And Crystal, you know, not only did he take the evidence, or I'll say lack of evidence, he actually went out and investigated himself, walked the crime scene. And so, you know, he's done a very thorough job. And I might add, this is not someone we had to write the book. He did this on his own. So this is not our opinion. This is from an outsider coming in. So it's pretty amazing. We were absolutely glad to see that the way the book was written, but it wasn't expressed upon our opinion. This is, you know, a third party's opinion.
And all of the books that Emilio Corsetti III has written are about wrongful convictions. He's been focused on wrongful convictions long enough. And that is the other kind of breath of fresh air about a guy like Emilio, not only a pilot, he could just relate to Kit in so many ways, you know?
Absolutely.
Very excited about the 26th. And we'll get to that here in just a second. I want to talk more about that. And we'll actually read a couple excerpts from the book to get everybody going on kind of some of the truth that's going to come out there. And we'll do that here shortly. But I want to get to some of the questions. How about the timing of the Phillips family? I mean, this just brings a million questions to me, the John Q. Kelly aspect of the Kit Martin trial.
It's fair to say that you were frustrated that no one was charged with the murder of your family?
That would be correct.
And that your frustration increased as it continued into the next year and still no one was charged?
That would be correct.
That was one of the reasons why trying to find evidence was more important.
Absolutely.
Okay. You consulted to try people to try and figure out how to move the case along or get charges brought?
Can you be?
I will be more specific.
Okay.
You hired an attorney, John Kelly.
Yes.
And he's famous for suing O.J. Simpson and people like that.
He's done a lot of cases. Yes, that is one.
Okay. He's on TV, things like that.
On TV?
Court TV, specifically.
Oh, okay. I haven't.
Okay. That's all right. You can tell me you don't know.
I can't respond to that.
That's fine. And he advised the family about things to do in order to try and get exposure to the case.
Again, exposure.
To get people to pay more attention to your brother's death so the charges would be brought.
Yes.
And you followed his instructions, right?
Some of them.
All right, I won't ask you about the ones that you didn't follow. And now we're here, right? Charges were finally brought.
That has nothing to do with Mr. Kelly.
I don't have any further questions.
What kind of attorney is he, Stacy?
You know, Crystal, it's only been recently that I even thought to look that up. And he's a personal injury attorney, which like really opened my eyes because I'm thinking, I thought if they went to an attorney, it would be a criminal attorney because, you know, we heard that in the trial from Chris's attorney, Tom Griffiths, asking him, you know, the question about this outside attorney that they had gone to for advice on getting a conviction, because this John Q. Kelly actually represented, was it Nicole Simpson in the O.J. Simpson's trial?
Nicole Brown's, and the Brown family, and won them $33 million from O.J. Simpson, by the way. So, and that was after O.J. was acquitted in a court of law. They just went after him in a civil situation and won $33 million. So this does invoke a lot of questions. The type of attorney that he is, the, you know, and the timing of Kit's arrest. I want to talk about that. And I think that we're going to get to all of that in the book. I Will Ruin You, The Twisted Truth Behind the Kit Martin Murder Trial. I'm telling you, this whole timing of the arrest is suspicious to me, because the family who hired John Q. Kelly provided so much of the evidence in this case. We cannot ignore that. The evidence presented by the family was the very sus shell casing, the dog tag, the .22 found by a neighbor that was underneath, I think, the refrigerator, the CDs used in the court martial left behind by Cal's, you know, BFF Joni in a little apartment that she was renting there. All of that given to law enforcement by the victim's family.
Yes, Crystal, I've got lots of questions about it. And actually, it wasn't an apartment. It was a house or a trailer. It was something that Cal had actually, I believe he and his wife had bought this home so that Joan could live there.
Oh, my.
So that's pretty. So, you know, but back to John Kelly, I just can't get over the fact that he's a personal injury attorney, and that I'm certain somebody's got some money to pay him from somewhere, somehow, because there's, why would he take this case? I mean, he does high profile case. And actually, when I looked onto, well, I'm just going to go there, Crystal. And if you decide we shouldn't, then you can tell me. But in reviewing testimony, I heard one of the family members state, well, John Kelly has nothing to do with the reason we're here, nothing to do. But then if you go to his website, you're going to see their testimonial for him on their on his page on the website of John Q. Kelly out of New York.
To choose their own defendant. You know, I mean, that is what looked like happened here. That's my opinion. But Stacy, I mean, that is just gigantic.
I don't understand. I have so many questions surrounding that. And as you mentioned, the evidence, the only evidence that I know, the only, and it wasn't even evidence, and that was the hairs that Barbara Whaley kept speaking of, saying that they were similar to Kit Martin's. But as you and I know, and as we've tried to make the public aware, the FBI tested those hairs in Quantico with the most extensive testing. It's called mitochondrial testing. And they came back and totally excluded Kit Martin, excluded him, could not have been his hairs. So all the other evidence, every single bit of the other evidence was brought in by the family months after the murders. I'm flabbergasted. I don't know any other way to put it. You know, I can't point fingers. I can't make accusations, but I absolutely do not understand and have questions about that.
And it's a personal injury lawyer. Just let that sit. Let that sit to our audience. John Q. Kelly.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Yeah, John Q. Kelly. Just go to John Q. Kelly. Go Google him. You'll find him all over the internet. He makes millions of dollars, by, you know, helping family through personal injury. I want you to let that sit in. Oh my goodness. That brings up so many questions. Hey, another question I have. There's so many, the timing of his arrest, Andy Beshear, of course, we got to bring it up. I'm sorry. Everybody says you might want to stay away because it just makes it sound like there's so much of a conspiracy theory going on there. But Andy Beshear was the attorney general of Kentucky. Matt Phillips got a meeting with the attorney general of Kentucky. Not a lot of people get right in front of the Attorney General, number one. I mean, that is just, that's a hard meeting to get.
It is a very hard meeting to get, Crystal, because I know that for a fact. I tried to reach out to the Attorney General before I knew anyone else had had a meeting. I wanted to talk to them. And my calls were screened every which way. And guess what? I never got the appointment. But somehow the family did.
This was so close to the primary election. He was the Attorney General, and he was running for governor. And I want you to know, 9 days after Kit Martin's arrest, he won the primary by a pretty slim margin, went on to become the governor later. Yes. It's just this to me, like Tory just said in that letter, is the governor getting into that seat right off the back of your ex-husband, my friend.
Well, I will tell you, Crystal, from what I recall, and again, you know, we're podcasters. We're talking about questions that we have. We're not lawyers. We're not attorneys. And these are just opinions and questions. But here's a big one I have that I absolutely question. And that was, you know, Kit Martin was taken down at the Louisville airport. He gets there. And from what I heard and what I understand, that there was already media there. They were ready to take him down. You know, Andy Beshear does this big press conference about how here's this man, we've caught him, we hope this family is, you know, this helps them put this to rest, and we've got the criminal based on new evidence. So the media is shouting out these questions. What's this new evidence? What's this new evidence? And he says, well, I can't talk about that right now. Guess what? We've never seen any new evidence.
No.
I mean, all these things that were brought, you know, forward from the family about 5 months after the murders. So Andy Beshear, what's that new evidence you talked about 3 or 4 years ago?
Where is it? And you'll learn that from I Will Ruin You, The Twisted Truth Behind the Kit Martin Murder Trial, with Emilio's book coming out here on the 26th. You're going to learn that. This is going to simplify this case for you. Also, Stacey, some of the other questions that keep bothering me is, why was the brother of Joan's boyfriend taken off the case at the very beginning? And where was he? Why couldn't he be found? I really want to know why we didn't get to hear from William Stokes or Joan and her son. Like some of the most, probably the star witnesses for the prosecution and the defense, right?
Right. Well, I think, you know, this is my opinion, but I think this is what was really, you know, I think there was a clip where Chris or Kit's attorney was speaking and said he thought it made all the difference in the world. But number one, the process server said he could not find William Stokes. And, you know, we need to back up and explain that a bit, because if, you know, people can go back and listen to all of our podcasts, but if they haven't listened, they may not understand what we're talking about.
Right.
Ed Stokes was the brother of William Stokes. Ed Stokes was on the police department. Our question, I think, that you're posing here is, on day one, how did the police department know that Ed Stokes needed to be removed from the case? How did they know that Ed Stokes was going to have a conflict? No one had pointed fingers. No one had accused anyone at that point. So how did they know to remove him from the case, if it was, as I understood, the first day?
You know, think about that, how big that question is, Stacey.
Right. I mean, maybe there's something we don't know. That's why we're asking the question. My understanding, it was day one, before anyone had been named as a person of interest, that they removed him from the case. Now, we could be wrong about that, but that is the information that we have been told.
Right.
So, you know, William Stokes was Ed's brother. And at the time, he was Joan Harmon's, William Stokes was Joan Harmon's boyfriend. The process server on the stand said he couldn't find him. And it was asked, he was in Pembroke. Did you look there? And for some reason, and my mouth just fell open. He said, oh, I didn't look in Pembroke. What? You didn't look? Why did you not look in Pembroke? So I don't know what was going on there, but we didn't hear from him. We didn't hear from Joan. Joan and her son actually pleaded the fifth And the judge allowed them to plead the fifth without the jury's knowledge. And so it looked to the jury, I can only imagine, that we're blaming these people or trying to name them as alt perpetrators, but yet we don't bring them into the courtroom. So to a jury, they're probably like thinking, yeah, whatever, right? You can't even get these people into the courtroom. But it is not because the defense didn't try, because we tried to bring those people into the courtroom, but we weren't able to. Again, a process server says, I couldn't find William Stokes. Well, did you look in Pembroke? No, I didn't look there. Are you kidding me? And then it was Joan and her son were allowed to plead the fifth, and the jury had no knowledge of that, that they pleaded the fifth. None. They're left with all these questions, as we were.
Isn't that something? Ed Stokes being taken off at the very beginning, William Stokes' brother, who was like a captain, something at the police station, is the big question. You know, what? Why? And where did Joan's name come out of all this?
Well, my understanding, like we've said, Crystal, is I don't think at that point anyone had even been named as a person of interest. So how did they know that this was going in that direction? That's a big question.
It is.
We want answers.
And here's another, I think, really big question. And that is this altercation that might have happened at the soda shop. Because if that happened, we have to talk about it. So let's explain what I mean by altercation at the soda shop. You want to, Stacey?
Sure. And again, this is what we've heard and we have not been able to verify, although we are trying to verify it because it's pretty big, you know?
It would be a huge, huge factor in this case if we could prove this. So apparently what happened at the soda shop was that Cal came to see Joni right after our investigators went to talk with Cal. So one of the things that Cal Phillips did right after our investigators left is he called Major Garrett over at the Army base at Fort Campbell. And the other thing that he allegedly did is headed on down the road to Todd County, over to Little Elkton, to the little place called the Soda Shop that's right there on the square. And that's where Joni worked. And we heard from Lisa Petrie all kinds of stuff about Joni. She even called the police. Her boss, Lisa Petrie, called the police because of the way Joni was acting. She didn't call him on the day of the murders. I think it took her a couple of days. She just thought it was very suspicious that Joni seemed happy, you know, about these murders. Yes. So apparently what had happened is Cal made his way over to Todd County there in Elkton, and there was some sort of altercation, verbal altercation between he and Joni. And we want to know more about that.
Well, the rumor was, and again, it's that until we can verify it, and we're going to try to verify it, was that Cal was heard saying to Joni, I'm not going down for you. And this was right, you know, before the court martial. I am not going down for you. And the other conversation that we do have verified is that Cal had ran into a contractor in the local area, Ken Buckner. And Ken Buckner was interviewed by a different private investigator. And he actually was quoted as Cal said to Ken, well, I guess you've heard that Joan used me. And Ken said, well, you know, Kit Martin, he's a good guy. And Cal was quoted as saying, I know.
Yeah.
And obviously this is, if he's saying this, all these people are making testimony, hearsay, saying, oh, Cal and Pam were scared of Kit. Well, Cal is quoted, you know, Ken had no skin in the game with Kit. He was absolutely an impartial person. And he's quoted saying, Cal says, I know, referring to that Kit's a good person. That doesn't say to me that they were scared of Kit. It says quite the opposite.
Exactly.
And again, I go back to the personal injury attorney. Is that where that came in? I'm confused.
See what all these things lead to, that same question for me. That is one of the biggest questions right there. Personal injury attorney. I'm sorry.
Yes.
But we are not finished with the Kit Martin case, by the way. Have you noticed? even though the, you know, if you're still awaiting the whole big thing with the, what was it, the Kentucky Supreme Court, that just ended up being a joke as well, didn't it, Stacey?
Yes, it did. I mean, the first, you know, at least they had explanation in the first appeal to them. They explained cases. They quoted case law and to the reason that, you know, it found okay, that it was found okay to allow Joan and her son to plead the fifth. I didn't have to agree with that. You know, we had two judges that didn't agree. And then when we go back for an appeal to be reheard, they just came back with a paragraph or two saying denied.
Oh, and there was a little addition to all of it, too, that was a first for any of us in the Kit Martin world, because we read over all of this paperwork. We know every word. We almost have this stuff memorized, most especially Kit himself. So the Supreme Court comes back also with 32 pieces of sealed evidence that we've never heard about.
Yes, and what I'm very confused about with that and just kind of distraught is that maybe Chris's defense attorneys saw that all the discovery, but Kit did not. And, you know, we tried to get that for months, and there was an attorney that was sincerely trying to help us. But every time, I mean, Chris signed a notarized document for me to go pick it up, for, you know, and every time we would get close to that, I don't know who it was, but somebody stepped in and said no, and they sent it to Frankfurt, and I heard reasons that copies were being made for whomever, maybe the Supreme Court. But now, before Kit has even seen all of that, personally seen it, now we've got 32 sealed documents that we have no idea what they are, none whatsoever. I don't know. I don't even know if that's constitutional. You know, maybe it is because that his attorneys saw it, but he certainly didn't get to see everything. He said all he saw was a few pieces of paper.
Well, you're about to learn, if you read the book, I Will Ruin You, that the Kit Martin story started back in 2012. It started way before any of this took place. It was a court-martial situation. And the last big question I have here before we wrap this up and get back to Emilio's book and do some excerpt reading here. I think the big question is, why was Major Garrett trying so hard to get Joni's bigamy charges dropped? Why was he trying to help her so much?
Well, he needed some for the court, I think, in the court martial to perceive her as reputable. And he knew that that was going to put a big cloud over her head, as many things did. In fact, they didn't even let her take the stand because they knew that her testimony was not trustworthy. It wasn't reputable, you know, because of her past. And, you know, because she had an excuse for everything. But as we know, and as we've talked about in our other podcasts, which listeners can go back and review them, and there is one or two that we have that's dedicated to Joan, but she has a complete history from teenage years of always blaming the man she's with when she leaves them for being corrupt or being an abuser. It's just that pattern with her.
In the Dateline episode, Mary Martins brought that up. You know, that's she did a great job on Dateline. Mary Martins did, who was our investigator for Kit, the investigator that was from Kentucky that was helping out the case, you know.
Right. He had a couple investigators and she was the local one. But, you know, I think she did a good job on the interviews that she did. And, you know, shout out to her for that. And then, you know, she said you could just see a history of Joan and people can go back and watch that Dateline episode and they can hear her testify about that. Exactly.
Yeah.
But I personally knew Joan and I knew that anything that come out of her mouth, you had to question anything. And it's just true.
But you walked this nightmare with her, man. I can't even imagine knowing a person like that. And I know your personality, Stacey. How did you handle someone like her without like completely losing your, you know what? I mean, you had to see lie after lie, and she was helping raise your children, for God's sakes.
I didn't always handle it with the most emotional intelligence, I can say that. But I tried very hard to get along with her for, you know, Kit and my kids, you know, we have three kids together, but I didn't always handle it very well. It was difficult for me to sit back, watch her, and you know, I'm pretty intuitive, and to watch her just lying out of both sides of her mouth and me knowing it. I mean, but men seem to fall for that with her.
Yeah, those eyes, I know, the blonde hair. She was a very charming looking person.
Well, back in the day, she was a beautiful woman. She really was. And there was no denying that. And I'll just bring this up and get the elephant out of the room. People can say, well, your Kit's ex-wife, you were jealous. And I think that's what he thought at the time. But I divorced him. We didn't want the same things in life. We had different goals. We had different dreams. We just had a different way of life. You know, he was used to the military life. I wasn't. I had always been with the security of one place. I had lived life as my family had. And we just wanted different things in life. So this had nothing to do with Joan. But if it had been some nice woman that I felt would be good around my children. But Crystal, I can honestly say to you, I was terrified every time my children would have to go there because I was afraid they would be alone with her. And I didn't know what she might do because I didn't trust her.
My goodness, Stacey.
You know, at one time I'll recall, and this is just on a personal note, and Kit was very upset with me because he wanted my children. He wanted me to put them on a plane and let him fly them to Germany where he was. My question was not, would he take care of them? I did not want them to be there because I was seriously afraid if I sent them and she was there, I might not ever see them again. And that's the honest to God's truth. That's how terrified I was of her.
That is terrifying. Living that life, you know, and also the kids were terrified. Let's not forget some of the stories you got. Like even one of the things you told us in the last couple of episodes, which really stayed with me, is that Joni may have been sneaking out even from the yellow house and going over to see the next door neighbor, if you will. So, your kids even kind of alluded to that, right?
They would come home on a Sunday. You know, Kit would get them every other weekend or when he was home and could from flying. And they would come home and we would sit down at the dinner table. And it was just always commented and it was a laugh. And it would say, okay, it's time for stories by Joni. And they would tell stories that she had told. And they were so ridiculous that we would just laugh. And, you know, and they did come home. And said, when Dad goes to sleep at night, John's going across the street to see Calvin. What do we do?
My God.
And that put us in a predicament. And I said, well, I can't tell you what to do, but I would always say, be honest with your dad, you know?
So I've been through it all. So yeah, what you and the family have been through is unheard of. I don't know that I've ever been around a family that's had such a tragic episode like this. I mean, not only does your ex-husband have to deal with PTSD from being overseas, and he was an Apache helicopter pilot and a war hero, and did, and a lot of the earnings of these medals were from the air. He was airborne. I tell you that he's a hero. He's a military hero. And for him to be sitting in jail right now, it makes me cry. And every single time I think about the military aspect of this, that is the way that Tori began her letter as we started here today, is that who knew that an officer like this would have to be fighting for his freedom at home? Thank you, Emilio Corsetti, the author, for picking up on that and for writing the book. The name of the book is I Will Ruin You. The pre-release is going on right now. You can go get your Kindle copy if you so dare. If you want, if you have the Kindle thing going, you can go ahead and get your copy pretty cheap. I think it's still $2.99. But just go to Amazon.com or just go directly to wildbluepress.com and search for I Will Ruin You. I Will Ruin You, the twisted truth behind the Kit Martin murder trial. And I figured we would go ahead and end this episode, Stacey, with a couple of the excerpts that they put on there at Wild Blue Press. You want me to since you did the Tory letter, I'll go ahead and read this if you want.
I think that's great. And I do think, you know, we need to emphasize a shout out to Wild Blue Press. And also, again, as you did to Emilio, you know, shout out to them for picking up the story and running with it. Because, you know, I think this book truly makes it understandable and is the most simple version that I have heard yet. While the prosecution's version was like a fairy tale, unbelievable because it didn't happen that way. But yes, Crystal, I think if you'll read that, that would be great.
Okay, let's do this then. This is from the book, I Will Ruin You, The Twisted Truth Behind the Kit Martin Murder Trial. And I'm not sure if this is the way it opens. I have not received my copy yet, darling. I know you have. But this is just from the book, one of the excerpts from the book from Emilio Corsetti. Not long after Kit's call to Christian County Sheriff's Office and Jones 911 call, two police officers showed up at 558 South Main Street in Pembroke, Kentucky. Sergeant Andrew Trafford was the first to arrive, followed shortly after by officers Eddie Fry and John Bruce. Alma, whose bedroom faced the street, watched the scene unfold from her bedroom window. Deputy Fry was barely out of his car when Joan approached and said, "He beat the shit out of me again." Deputy Fry asked Joan where she had been hit. Joan pointed to her temples and to the back of her head. Deputy Fry used his flashlight to examine Joan. When Deputy Fry indicated that he didn't see any marks, Joan replied that her son was upstairs and that he should talk to him. Deputy Fry then headed to the back porch, where Sergeant Trafford spoke with Kit. Fry told Sergeant Trafford that he would go inside and question the kids. When Deputy Fry first entered the residence, the first thing that caught his attention was how dark it was inside. He had to use his flashlight to see. Mackenzie was the first of the kids to talk to Deputy Fry. She indicated that there had been a verbal argument and that she hadn't seen anything. When Deputy Fry asked where the boy was, Mackenzie said he was upstairs. Still using his flashlight to guide him, Officer Fry climbed the steep stairs to the second floor. Both Alma and Elijah met him at the top of the stairs. Fry indicated that he wanted to talk to Elijah. After introducing himself, he asked Elijah to tell him exactly what he had heard and seen. He added that he needed to know 100% what had happened, no matter who was at fault. Elijah said that his dad was upstairs on the couch and that his mom came upstairs and yelled at him. Elijah then emphasized that he never touched her. Deputy Fry asked again, "You never saw him hit her?" "No," Elijah said. "He did not hit her." So that's just one of the excerpts to let you know kind of where it started at the very beginning, how it started. That was a 911 call way before all of any murders were going down in Pembroke. That was just kind of what was going on inside of the house at Kit Martin's house in the night they actually called. And again, everything here, Stacey, is based on the evidence that was presented at the trial.
You know, and Crystal, I just want to comment on that because as you were reading that, you know, I thought, you know, we talk about what Kit's going through and, you know, what Kit's family's going through and his parents are going through and everybody's going through. But, you know, imagine what Joan's kids have been through. They just didn't have a chance.
No, they didn't.
I feel so sorry for them.
I do, too. I really do. I can't imagine a woman like that raising me, or a man. I mean, any parent of any kind that was a, you know, pathological liar, allegedly.
Right.
And, you know, that's kind of what happened. This kind of lying got out of control in a small town like that. And everyone thought that Kit was the worst possible enemy that could possibly be bestowed upon the Phillips family, including the Phillips themselves. They were terrified of him.
Right. And Crystal, she's not alleged pathological liar. She is. So I just want to clarify that, and I'll stand behind that.
Let's do one more excerpt, okay? This one I thought was really good, too. This is from I Will Ruin You, The Twisted Truth Behind the Kit Martin Murder Trial. Check it out on the 26th when it goes on sale, or go get your copy now. If you want to go to wildbluepress.com, they'll let you know how to do all of that. Okay, here we go. Tom Griffiths, of course, that is the defense, the lead defense attorney for Kit. We're going to go into the courtroom now in Emilio's book. Tom Griffith summed up the prosecution's case against Kit in his opening statement. He talked about how this case differed from any other case that he had tried. He said it was different because Kit didn't do it. He continued with the same theme, explaining how in most cases, there is evidence that you can hold in your hands and analyze. He talked about how police, particularly Detective Scott Smith, looked everywhere for DNA evidence and how every lab report returned negative for Kit's DNA. Excluded, not him, Tom emphasized as he pointed towards Kit. That's what the lab says. Unlike Barbara Whaley.
Wow, Crystal.
I know, right? Unlike Barbara Whaley, who stood at the podium for the entirety of her opening statement, Tom Griffith used the entire courtroom. He paced the floor back and forth between the podium and the defense table. He stood before the jury box and talked directly to the jurors. He sometimes strayed in front of the witnesses' stand, which he spoke to the witnesses who would testify. Tom told the jurors that the .22 caliber bullets sent to the lab did not match any of Kit's .22 caliber guns. Likewise, he said the .45 caliber bullet fragments found in the body of Calvin Phillips did not match Kit's Glock 45. He rattled off a few other types of evidence one might expect in a murder trial. Fingerprints? Nope. Statements? Nope. Witnesses? Nope. Tom paused to let this lack of evidence sink in. Fundamentally, the Commonwealth is asking you to guess, he said finally. Shifting away from the lack of evidence, Tom touched on the many, many forces working against Kit. There are folks out there who believe that Kit is guilty, and some of them are going to get up on the witness stand, and they're going to try to guess their way through it, Tom said, pointing to the witness stand. And that's exactly what happened, isn't it, Stacy? It was one guessing game after another, and no evidence, not 108 pieces of DNA, pointed to Kit. None of the...
How could anybody say he's guilty? How could... You know what? They might not like him because they don't like his military personality, but no one on this earth, and this is objectively, because Crystal, I would not be fighting for him if I thought he had anything to do with this.
Same here.
How could anybody say there's not reasonable doubt? Anybody. 108 DNA samples with nothing coming back to him. Usually DNA is proved to find someone is guilty. Nothing pointed to him. The hairs didn't match. But here's the other question I have. Who did they match? Why don't we know whose DNA it is? Why don't we know whose hair it is? Those are questions I have, because in that, you probably have your answer to this case.
And we move forward now, right? We move forward. Because I think it's a game changer. I will ruin you. The twisted truth behind the Kit Martin murder trial is going to change everything. It will simplify this very convoluted story. It was chaotic and it was by design. Does everybody understand that? That was by design. You want to just be tired of it and say, okay, he's guilty. You said he was, he's guilty. And just be tired of it. Yes. That's what happened.
We know he's not.
And I'm telling you, we are not going to stop until we get justice for Christian Kit Martin.
And isn't it amazing, Crystal? Isn't it amazing how well he is adjusting and what good use he's using of his time in prison? And I know I've seen the comments people say, just because he's teaching Bible classes doesn't make him innocent. No, but the lack of evidence makes him innocent. But he is teaching Bible classes. He is now full-time in the chapel working, and he is changing people's life even where he is now. So how admirable is that for this man?
it makes me cry even harder for him. I mean, the guy is just an upstanding American citizen. His freedom's been yanked from him. He fought so hard for our freedom, the PTSD that he and his father and his sister and all of the military generations from his family, what they endured for freedom and to have it yanked from someone like him, we're not going to stand for it. We're just not going to stand for it anymore. And Stacey, God bless you, my dear friend. I thank you so much for doing this with me. Stacey was married to Kit Martin for what, 12 years or something? You have 3 kids with him. They're all adults now. I just want to say thank you for being a voice for the voiceless, man.
Well, thank you, Crystal, because, you know, I want to shout out to everyone who is supporting him. I know he has thousands and thousands of supporters globally. And I want to thank you, Crystal. I want to thank all the listeners and all the supporters out there, because, you know, you didn't even know this man. And you stood up and you said, this is wrong. And we've got to change this. We've got to change it. And we won't stop until we do.
I've always said it's the greatest American tragedy of our time. And I'm not going to sit back for one more second. We do move forward. And Stacey and I, once this book comes out, we are going to begin season 2 on the Free Kit Martin podcast. And I think what we're going to do in season 2, and I think it's just a brilliant idea, is do what Emilio did. Go back to the very beginning and explore what happened at the beginning that caused this chaotic, unbelievable mess to begin with.
You know, the court martial, and again, that began with Joan's accusations, her false accusations.
We'll get to it, and we will see you next time. Thank you so much for listening to the Free Kit Martin podcast. I'm Crystal McKenzie.
And I'm Stacey Stone. Thank you so much for your time and for listening and your support for Kit Martin. Remember to hashtag everything on your social media, Free Kit Martin, and the other hashtag is Joan Had the Phone. Thanks so much for listening.